Welcome back to Word Up with Dani Katz. I am your host, Dani Katz. I am an author, journalist, and a quantum languaging coach and consultant. What that means is that I teach people how language programs consciousness, how language programs reality at large, and how to transform reality and evolve our consciousness with language. I've also been known to cultivate and share an opinion or two or 12 about culture and consciousness and how they are evolving, devolving, and being manipulated by the powers that were. Here at Word Up, we are devoted to fostering critical thinking while supporting you in becoming your most authentic, empowered, liberated, realized, amazing version of yourself. Our every show aims to expand your consciousness, raise your frequency, sharpen your critical thinking skills, and make you giggle. And think. Given the radical uptick in censorship over the past few years, combined with the complete co-opting slash decimation of my own personal industry, journalism, I started Word Up to have a free speech-friendly platform in which to engage exploratory, solutions-based conversations with visionaries, mystics, original thinkers, and rebel badasses who are helping to make the world more wonderful. The first half of my interviews run between 30 to 90 minutes and are always posted here for free public listening. The second halves are reserved for paid supporters on my Patreon and my Locals platforms, where for as little as $5 a month, you can access all of my second half conversations along with oodles of other bonus content and opportunities to drop in with me, to drop in with our High Vibe tribe, and lots of other awesome things. In addition to interviews, Word Up also features quantum languaging upgrades, planetary service announcements, and propaganda analysis, which I call Spot the Propaganda. Thank you so much for tuning in and for sharing your sacred attention with me and our High Vibe tribe of change makers. Be sure to click that subscribe button so you can stay abreast of our every episode. Thank you for also clicking the like button, for sharing far and wide, and for leaving some kind words as a review as you are authentically inspired. As well, if you are gleaning any value whatsoever from these shows, consider supporting me on Locals and or Patreon. And as you are wanting to learn more about my quantum languaging coaching and consulting services or nab copies of my books, find me on DaniKatz.com as well as on quantumlanguaging.com. Okay, I think that's it for our housekeeping. Buckle up and prepare to enjoy this episode of Word Up with Dani Katz. Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Dani Katz. Today, I am joined once again by Word Up podcast favorite Michael Wan, fresh off of an eclipse ceremony, and here to share some really juicy reflections and contemplations on the eclipse, the key bridge collapse, and surrealism, and what this realm really truly is. Before we jump in, I'm reminding you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment, and please buckle up and prepare to enjoy my conversation with Michael Wan.
So I'm curious, you said that you were traveling, so I always like to know where people are. Where were you traveling to?
So I took a road trip to the Texas Hill Country for the Confluence event, where I gave a talk and delighted in like-minded community that I didn't realize I'd been missing so hardcore.
Wow. Did you camp?
Yes, I camped.
How many people were there?
I'd say there were 300 to 400. Because they ended up canceling the Austin eclipse, like the day of the event, and so many people were screwed, the day before the eclipse, we got some people rolling in just to have an eclipse celebration who weren't necessarily part of the other Confluence talks.
All right. And so who arranged the one you went to?
So this was arranged. I think Alex Zack had a lot to do with it, and it was at Sovereignty Ranch, which is run by Molly Engelhart, who's part of the whole like Engelhart Cafe Gratitude dynasty. I don't know if you know of them. It might be a West Coast thing specifically. And she has a couple vegan restaurants in LA. So I knew her from that realm. But now she has this like big ranch with sheep and pigs and cows and goats and greenhouses and fruit trees. And so it was hosted there, but I think it was mostly Alex Zack who like worked with them to put it together.
And what did you think about the event, like walking away from it? It sounded like you had a really positive experience.
I had such a positive experience. It was fantastic. It leaned heavily on sovereignty, common law, extricating ourselves from that system. There was some crypto talks, homesteading talks. It was mostly about how to be, sovereign and empowered in the face of the fuckery.
And what did you talk about?
I talked about my new book, The Language of Betterarchy, and using language to safeguard our agency regardless of what's happening in the external world. So setting our frequency to sovereign and empowered regardless of what the powers that were attempt to do to us.
Okay. All right.
And
Sounds
it went really
fantastic.
well.
That sounds fantastic. I'm going to be on Alex Zek's podcast next May. May 15th, May 15th, so in a month, not next May, like the coming May. I meant next month.
Awesome. And do you know him? Have you podcasted with him before?
No. I was at like a similar type of event that you're describing, similar in terms of maybe audience or participants and topics, in Florida when I was in Florida this autumn, and he was there, and I met him through Mike Winner, Alpha Vedic. And so
Yeah,
I know
Mike
Mike Winner. And so it was actually a really funny story, like how I met Alec. Like he was with Mike Winner. Me and Mike Winner hadn't met face to face, and so we were talking, and he introduced me to Alec, and I didn't know who he was, and I carry with me like a handmade leather ball, which I made. It's like I took a tennis ball and I cut it open. I use it as a template, and I use that to cut leather or to cut the leather, and then I sew the two pieces together, and I have this leather ball, and it's stuffed with like rice. And so it's I'm always like I'll hold it in my hand, and I use it like kind of like in a contact juggling sort of way. Like I just roll it over my hand. It's really kind of like maybe my version of like what a fidget tool does for a kinesthetic sort of person. But it's for me like the authenticity of my self-expression. Like I gotta make my shit. Like, that's important to me. And so like there's that. So I have this with me all the time. I carry it with me, and like I walk around. It serves like there are multiple benefits for doing so. So I meet Alex Zek, and I'm holding it. And there's a thing that kind of happens when I hold this ball, and people are like, "Is that a hacky sack?" And I'm like, "Do I look like a hacky sack, motherfucker? Does this look like?" I mean, I'm carrying this chip like.
You
No way. But anyway, I have in my mind like it's a game really I play with myself, like in my own internal world about like, no, this isn't a hacky sack. Like, are you crazy? This isn't a hacky sack. This is a handball. Like I just made that up because it's just something I play with in my hand. And then Alex, like he's real like he's very grounded in his speak, and we just met, and he maybe was even more so because we just met. He's like, "No, that's not a handball." And I don't like know who this guy is. I literally met him like 30 seconds earlier. Like, "Hey, Mike, this is Alec. Alec, this is Mike." I'm like, "Hey, what's going on, dude?" And he's like, "Hey, what's that in your hand? Is that a hacky sack?" I'm like, "No, it's not a hacky sack. It's a handball." "No, that's not a handball. How can you tell me it's not a handball? I made it." He's like, "Oh, well, I used to, I was on the Olympic handball team, and like I know what a handball looks like, and like that's not a handball." And I just started laughing so hard because it's like I carry that like kind of like the when I play that dialogue, like that's just something with me just being silly because I don't typically meet the world with like that fun edge, but I can get it. And it's fun for me to do it over something so ridiculous about like the handball. Like I said, it gives me a lot of different like there are many purposes for using it, but it's always like a really nice way to like interact with human beings until you find something you can really interact with. It's a conversation piece, I suppose. And I've had the hacky sack handball conversation countless times, and the dude floored me. And I was like, this is perfect. This was like scripted. This was scripted by the people who write the script. And so, like, you know, it's a real honor to finally get to meet you. And so anyway, then he invited me to come on his program. And apparently, I guess he's got a pretty big program. So that was my story with Alex. So it's funny that this is how our conversation today begins.
Well, I want to jump on that because I met Mike Winner. I'd gone to his, he did a talk on Cordal, which I was super into. And after attending his talk at Confluence, I'm like, oh, I want to have this guy on my show. And so the next morning, we're in the very long line for caffeine, or, you know, there's just like one place where you could get beverages or food or whatnot. And I got in line behind Andrew Kaufman, who made it, he's been on my show twice, but he made it really clear when I introduced myself to him at Confluence that, like, he didn't really want anything to do with me, or really anyone else. He just seemed to kind of have his, like, tight-knit crew of, like, common law dudes, and everyone else was irrelevant. So I'm in line behind him, and I could feel for the guy because it's like, oh, fuck, I have to talk to this girl. And he lets these two guys cut in front of not just me, but like the whole line, which I thought was a dick move. And one of those was Mike Winner. And so I said, hey, I'd love to have you on my podcast. And it was like, I was getting like a little bit of attitude, not from Andrew, but this other guy who was with them. And he was like, well, who are you? And I said, I'm Danny Katz. And he was like, oh, I love your podcast. It's so nice to meet you. So it kind of softened the other pushback that I was getting. And the thing about Alec was he'd been on my radar because of, I mean, you know, the general conversations, but also he's so hypercritical of David Martin. And David Martin wrote the foreword for my new book. So when I kind of put my new book out and included David Martin's foreword, I got some pushback from people who were like, David Martin's a shill. And I'm like, know your audience. Like, why would you tell this to me when he's my friend and he wrote the foreword for my book? Like, you know, like, know who you're talking to. So someone had sent me the interview that Alec had done with David, and I was like, yeah, I'm not really getting Alec's issue. But that was how he would be had been on my radar. So I was following him on Instagram, and he posted something that seemed like my, like, basically a blurb from my book, word for word, but I didn't see myself cited. So I was like, what do I do about this? So I ended up shooting Alec a message saying, like, I noticed you posted an excerpt from my book, but you forgot to cite me, and I'm, you know, I don't want to question your integrity, but I'm just a little bit confused. And it was just something that was in the zeitgeist, and he'd sent me actually, he responded right away, and he sent me a screenshot of a post he'd put up in 2022 that was similar. So it was clear that he hadn't taken my work. But what was fascinating to me was that spending time with him at this Confluence event, I think the most prominent characteristic of Alec is his integrity. Like, it's such a capital I embodied integrity, like, through and through. So I thought it was funny that my first interaction with him was me questioning his integrity, which could not have been more off base for who he actually really is.
We could thank West Point for that, I suppose.
Probably.
Probably.
I know people who are in the military who still don't have integrity in the way that I see him holding his integrity.
Well, West Point isn't just the military. Like West Point is Harvard in the military. Like in order to get well, and not everyone who goes to West Point. I was being a little bit like I was being silly when I said that, but like that's the whole point of the military academies is like, you know, the best of the best and integrity and all those sort of things. And so and th this and I say that also because that has been spilling into probably where I'm hoping to take our conversation today. Like, you know, so I that was like that was a little foreshadowing, I suppose.
Oh, awesome. Do I get more hints as to where we're going?
Now we'll just we'll maybe we'll do a little. Is there more that we want to talk about? Like, is there anything else about you want to share about the event or your interactions there or any of those folks?
The only thing to mention, which I mentioned briefly on my show with Emily this week, is that it seemed like, and granted, like the event was about sovereignty. The event was mostly families who were figuring out their homesteading situation and whatnot. But what I noticed was that I was one of the few people who was saying, how about we don't let it get to slave world? Like, I love all these plans for how we're going to survive if slave world is accomplished. But it seemed to be a disconnect for a lot of people, the idea that we don't have to let the tyranny go that far. And I understand that that might not have been, the right audience for that particular mindset, but it's that disconnect that I'm excited for the people in our community to like transmute and like get up off our knees and like shut this shit down.
What I'm becoming more like thoughtful about in my life is, and you know, as like and as life unfolds, is like the whole purpose, you know, when I think about when I reflect on myself is like I'm just holding a particular frequency during whatever this time is. And that's really true for all of us, but like just being very aware and like, okay, well, what is the frequency which I'm holding? And that's where we're going to go in this conversation. But you're doing the same thing, right? Like if you what you just said, like you're surrounded by all of these families who are in a certain mindset, and your presence there, like just holding that frequency of like you. Like of what Danny is, like, you know, the way you hold your energy, the way you just naturally are. I mean, that's true for all of us. How we show up is how we hold our energy. That's all I'm saying. And like what we add to the ingredient mix in the recipe or whatever metaphor we want to use in terms of what's coming next. And so I think it's great. That's a great story. I appreciate you sharing that.
Thanks.
All right. So can I want to talk about the eclipse. Can we talk
Great,
about the
let's do
eclipse?
it.
So I've talked about this a bunch of times before. So I want to give it like maybe a little bit, and the eclipse is past. I want to give a little bit of a summary of where I was coming from, and then maybe bring it then more so as to what like life has been since then and where it's going. So last year, in fact, when we met last summer, and last summer was kind of like a rough a dress rehearsal for what is going to happen this summer, which is what we're calling like an aerocirculation sort of project. Aero being AROW, but also EROS, and where eros just means life force vitality, right?
I'm just laughing. I'm excited to see where you're taking this because I had the world's most contentious podcast interview with Mark Gaffney on Saturday, all about his cosmoerotic human and bringing Eros to the globalist agenda and the whole like Eros thing. So I'm just laughing, bringing
Right.
it
So
up.
when I say arrows, it's only because we're playing with the word arrow for so long. And when you boil down what eros is, like outside of an erotic expression, it's just life force energy. Like that's what that means. And the idea comes from like an aerocirculation mission is literally you circle the land for the purpose of preparing the land for a new destiny. Like that's it. And there is nothing that sounds more crazy in our modern value system than say, hey, this is what I'm doing. What are you doing? Oh, you're preparing for like you're stocking up the food and you're preparing for like you're the homestead for like what's coming. Yeah, I got it. So what I'm doing is I'm just kind of driving around with starboard, and I'm building the starboard, the natural or a reflection of what's going on in the sky right now. And I've got water from the oldest river on the planet, and I'm pouring it in other rivers, and I'm taking that river water, and we're just traveling around because this is what like the Mongolians did, and this is how they prepared for the new world. Like, it sounds crazy. But then at the same time, the old adage, like, being well adjusted to a sick society is no sign of good health. It's like, that's how you know you are doing, you're on a certain path, because it doesn't make sense. Like, if you could be grounded in understanding, like, mainstream reality and, paradigm, but then you're like, okay, but I'm still putting my life force energy, like, what I'm going to do, like, this is what I'm doing. And so we did that last summer, and we're doing it. Yes,
Can I interject something?
please.
Did you ever see the Lars von Trier movie Melancholia?
A long time ago, but I was just rereading about it last week. Why?
I would recommend giving it a watch because as you were speaking, that was the vision I was getting. Because in that movie, it's like an apocalyptic, right? Like the earth is being destroyed. And the Kirsten Dunst character is like a hot mess in terms of her 3D life. But when it comes to like psycho emotionally preparing and holding space for her family for the apocalypse, she's like the queen. She's who you would want there. Different skill sets, and one's far more real versus like being able to function in the matrix construct. That's what I was thinking of when you were talking about the task of moving the water and whatnot.
So, like, that's the thing. That's what we did last year. We're doing again this year. And laid out all the places we're going to be and dates. And, like, this is the people who are part of my community who follow this, like, they come out to these sort of things and so forth. So when coming up with, like, the nuts and bolts of the schedule, was like, well, where are we going to start this? And so we're going to start it. This is, like, back in January when the planning was happening. We're going to start it at, like, the major confluence of the Susquehanna River. That's the oldest river that I'm talking about. And that's, like, in, like, the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania. And it's in this town called Sunbury. And we're like, this makes sense to do it, like, when the eclipse is happening, because that's what Sunbury means. A buried sun is an eclipse. And so it kind of began with that. And, like, obviously I knew an eclipse was coming, and I was aware of, like, some of the things that captured the nation's attention, like, at the time period of January. But in the buildup leading to the actual eclipse, like, I was surprised by how the world responded to the eclipse. Kind of like in a similar way that you just, like, brought up, like, the whole sort of, like, almost eye rolling, like, Eros, like, eroticism into, like, I see all that. And I have the same thing. Like, I've been calling the thing Susquehanna alchemy for since 2017. And, like, when alchemy became, like, this whole sort of thing, like, I won't go down that path, but like, I find myself, like, using words or concepts, like, that then get, like, caught up in, like, something else. So, like, we were planning on doing this eclipse thing because it was Sunbury and because it worked with, like, the timing, all this sort of thing to do that. So, all right. So I was talking about it and the time leading up to it, and just bringing my own unique approach to, what's an eclipse, all this sort of stuff. And
Wait,
then.
let's pause because you do have a unique relationship to time and time tracking. So can you give us like a high level overview as to what the eclipse means to Michael Wan or in Michael Wan's paradigm?
So, also, like, eclipses, like, new moons, moon, like, moon cycles. So an eclipse will fit into that because obviously it deals with the moon, but then also it happens on a somewhat regular basis. And to me, the foundational truth is it's an opportunity to, like, take pause and reflect in life. And then the more subjective truth is, like, well, then you get to apply whatever your particular story of, like, what's going on and what the heavens are and all of that to it, and it works. But, like, to me, like, I really take it as these are, like, moments in time, opportunities marked by the realm which we're in. So that's kind of like the eclipse. But then you could go and look at a specific eclipse. You could look at a specific moon. And you could look at the unique texture to it. And what I mean by that, like, what are the details about this eclipse, which is different than the other eclipses, and so forth? And this eclipse is just, like, like just piling it on, just piling on all of the different things that make it interesting. Like a lot of people are talking about like the X, and like the harmonic convergence and like, you know, Civil War, Bible stuff, all that sort of stuff. And that's all like, yeah, I saw that. That's true. That really happened. But I was much more intrigued by these two things. One was where the eclipse was happening. So using just like tropical placement, I think the eclipse was like at 24 degrees, maybe it was 19 degrees Aries. That was the exact same degree as Chiron. So Chiron's 19 degrees Aries and the moon and the sun are at 19 degrees Aries during an eclipse. North Node, I think, was like 15 degrees Aries. So I'm like, this is a Chiron eclipse.
Sorry, I was just looking at my chart. I was looking at my Aries degrees.
Right. As you should, because you're like, all right, well, like, how does this meet me? And that's a very, very like fair and important question. Like, so you go and you look at, so Chiron's in play. And then you got the whole thing with the comet. Not only is there a comet, like, I mean, there's usually like comets, like a couple of comets, I think, like every year or so. But this comet was in the same part of the sky as the eclipse. It was like maybe 10 degrees away from where the actual eclipse, like at like 19, it was in early Taurus, if you will, is where the comet was. So at least in theory, the eclipse happens, and then like the comet like should at least be visible. But whatever that means, like what when I say like the texture, I'm like, this is unusual. This is uncommon. And within our like, you know, taught superstitions on how to meet the heavens is like, well, eclipses are something to be, you know, they're serious omens, and comets are serious omens, and now this comet and the eclipse are happening at the same time. Like all this stuff is happening, and like I'm like, this is fascinating. So I'm like kind of like watching all of that, and then the Key Bridge collapses, right? And the Key Bridge collapses on the lunar eclipse. So eclipses happen like in pairs, like. When an eclipse happens, it's on a new moon or a full moon, and they come in pairs. It's when the new moon, full moon are near the North Node or South Node. That's like the mechanism for how, you know, we're supposed to understand it through the astrological model. And the Key Bridge, which is like in Baltimore, which I have a personal connection to, is happening. Or a personal connection to Baltimore happens, and I've been talking like eclipses, like there's that's happening. And technically, where Baltimore is, the Baltimore Harbor, that's, you know, it's part of the Susquehanna River. It's part of the body of water, the totality of the body of water, which is the Susquehanna River, the oldest. But you know, it goes in the Chesapeake Bay. The Chesapeake Bay is the Susquehanna River. It's just in different form and a different name. So few people can put one and one together and make that conclusion, but it's a factual truth. So now it's getting like really kind of personal, and I'm watching this like personal meaning like it's speaking to me. You know, we're all having personal conversations with whatever, you know, whatever reality is, whatever life is, God, universe, you know, whatever you want to call it, there's a conversation that's happening. So there's that. I'm like, okay, this is getting like a little bit more fun. Like, and then I look a little bit, I think a little bit more about it. And I'm looking at the comet. The comet's called Pons Brooks. That's the name of the comet. And the word pons means bridge. It's the Latin word for bridge is pons. And then Chiron, do you know the symbol of Chiron astrologically?
No.
It's a key. Go look at it.
Correct. It is a key.
It's a key. It's a key. So now we've got Pons Brooks, because I was already like all hyped up on like, oh, this is the Chiron Pons Brooks eclipse. That's what's making this interesting. Like I made that conclusion, and then the Key Bridge collapses. Like in a place which is right, like all of this sort of stuff. And I'm like, okay, this is getting like I'm
Are
like.
you from Baltimore?
Yeah.
Okay,
Okay,
continue.
like whatever this means. What like so this is like the in my opinion, the tightrope walk. How do you like have this conversation just not be crazy. Like not like not like 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 not go too far with it. No, this is a little bit too hard, this is a little bit too soft, but this is just right. Like, what's that just right with this sort of information, right? I'm already in the midst of like, oh, I'm going to go and do an aerocirculation mission. What do you got planned this summer? Well, I got probably like $200 to my name, and I'm putting all of my energy in being free and living life based upon something that makes sense to only fucking me. And the people who hear this, like it's crazy, Danny. Like the people who like get involved with this, it speaks to them in a way I don't quite get. Like there's something like so ridiculous and authentic about it that it's like this is the most real thing I've ever seen. It's real because you're not trying to do anything other than you're like, okay, I'm just going to do this. And now we got the Chiron, like all this stuff is happening. So I'm just watching this. Like, I'm like, just like, I'm a regular guy. I'm like, how, like, what am I doing? Like, so, okay.
Hold on, I want to speak to that because I know you and Emily go so deep into the synchro mysticism, and
Right.
I sometimes hear, I honor the sanity in it, in the questioning of the personalization of the signs, the symbols, the alignments, the messages. And if we are living in simulations that are oversouls designed for us, then why wouldn't all of these things hold keys for us specifically?
I would agree with that. I would agree with that, but I think that it has been I mean maybe you're absolutely right. So I'll answer that then. I'll answer the question this way. To me, there is a potentiality which I would prefer not to experience of going overboard with that. I've seen people which I've thought have been overboard with like how things work. Like that's what I mean by the tightrope walk.
Yep.
Like I know that I'm having a very why I do these shows, and I think maybe the reason why people watch them is because there's a tangibility. Like part of like as you were saying before, you were saying why do we have to go down to slavery before we decide not to go down? Like, why do we have to go that far down that path? Like, everything is kind of, I agree with that. And there's a lot more play, like in both sense of the words, like playfulness, but then like wiggle room play in terms of how reality is unfold in this mystery that we're all express or experiencing. And I try to hold that middle path sort of like, how grounded can I be, but then how open can I be? And that's like a constant sort of thing for me, to balance. So I think that's maybe where that comes from. But then there's also this thing, which I don't know if this is what you meant exactly, but this is how I took it, was it also implies like a little bit of a lack of trust. Like, okay, well, if you can see this, and if the world, if reality works this way, and if reality's speaking this loudly to you, why don't you just trust it a little bit more? Like, the fallback trust game. And that could be true. Like, I mean, because I'm describing a certain thing, like, well, if I go too far to the right, well, maybe I can't trust myself, or too far to the left, I can't trust myself. So I'm gonna hold this middle path. So you gave me something to sit with. But I'm not gonna sit with it now. I'll do that when we get off the conversation because we're gonna go someplace with this. So I'm looking at all this stuff and I'm like talking about this on my channel and like it's fun. Like it's fun to tell these stories. It's fun the way that this is like leading up to this event, which I'm doing in Sunbury. And then I realized that what actually brought down the bridge, like there was a boat, right? Do you know like how detailed did you follow this story? Like on a scale of
I
1 to 10?
saw was it Laura Loomer or Logan? Like something through Bannon's channel where they had like a slow motion video of the boat hitting the bridge that seemed like kind of calculated and deliberate in the just right placing, and then I know, again, like I don't know anything. I know
Sure.
what the news media has told me that like what a great way to create chaos and, you know, screw over Maryland and, you know, create all these clusterfucks in terms of how toxic chemicals are moved throughout the country. I
Right.
don't really know anything.
Okay. All right. Well, so I'll say this. When I first saw it, I was like, oh, this looks exactly like 9/11. There's literally like the collapse of it. I'm like, I've seen that. I this isn't my first rodeo. I've been here before. So the name of the boat, because you know boats are named, and the name of the boat is called the Salvador Dali.
You know, my dad went to prison for stealing dollies.
Like actual original ones?
Yes.
That's kind of awesome. Do you know which ones? Do you know which ones?
They were drawings that ended up getting sold for nothing at a garage sale. Like the whole thing was just ridiculous. But
So
Dolly
he's got the.
has kind of a special place in our family history because of it.
I can imagine. So I'm gonna start to deconstruct the Dolly thing in a moment, but I'm gonna add this into the equation. So was a very prolific artist, and one of his paintings, I think, was called The Bridge of Dreams. And it's like this bridge which goes to nowhere. And when it's juxtaposed, that painting next to like what the Key Bridge looks like right now, like looks like the same thing. Kind of weird, right? So I've got a little bit of understanding, or I had a little bit of an understanding of what I thought surrealism was. Like, I'm like, oh, Salvador Dali, surrealism. What's that other guy's name? Marguerite, I think his name, the other art. Like I know who those guys are, but like I don't really go much deeper. You know, I just like People magazine level of what I thought surrealism was. And I thought of it primarily in terms of as like an artistic movement from a certain time period and a certain style. So I went and I started looking into Salvador Dali. I'm like, all right, what's this about? Because this is all too surreal, right? And so surrealism is it's a philosophy. It was a philosophy which came about, it's like the early 1900s, and it was pretty much like came out of like Paris and from like a bunch of philosophers and artists and poets and political thinkers and so forth. And it was an appreciation that there is a greater reality which the culture which they were living in the time, so let's say 1920s Paris, like, you know, their paradigm was like, well, this isn't like real. There's another reality which this is existing within. And we can access that through our dreams. And we access that through like this when the whole idea of like the unconscious was first starting to be named, which, you know, side asterisk point. Imagine like not imagine all of the people who did not have the way which how they thought of the human experience if they did not have a model as like what we call like the unconscious and the subconscious and so forth. Like, how did they explain things? What model do we not have, which someone else has? Like that just I find to be interesting. But anyway, so they called that greater reality, they called it a super reality, not like super, like super duper, but super like greater, the super reality. And that is what, like in French, that was the surreal. The surreal is the super reality. And so the movement of surrealism was an appreciation that a super reality exists, that the ridiculousness of their time, of how they lived and their rules and laws was just like that was ridiculous. And these artists and philosophers, they wanted to create ways to allow this super reality to become more accessible in regular life to change the human experience.
So the movement was created to have to move the needle on actual 3D reality.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wonder what the markers would be for them to measure their success in that.
I mean, I don't know. I
I
don't
mean,
know.
this extent of clown world that we're living in might mean like they did it.
Okay, so like I'm reading this, I'm like, surrealism isn't just like a style of art. Surrealism, so what they started doing is they began to juxtapose seemingly very, very different ideas next to each other, but they're linked in a way. All
Okay.
right, and so like that's what a lot of the art would be or some of the music. And the more like different the two juxtaposed ideas that were being, put side by side, and the stronger whatever the link is, like the more different they are and the stronger, then it creates like more of a magnetism of its poetic strength. And that's like how you're like accessing, or you begin to like, oh, open up like however you allow this surrealist way of being to begin to like come into fruition, let's say. So I'm gonna pause there for a moment. Synchronicity, like that term to describe what we're calling a meaningful coincidence, came about in like the 1950s, right? That's when I think Jung came up with that term. And if I'm accurate in my history, or at least how history's told, is that he was mostly interested in synchronicities between sleeping dreams and waking life. So a little bit different than what we think of synchronicity nowadays, which is like any sort of like meaningful coincidence, usually while waking. He was primarily focused upon dreams.
In terms of like precognition.
I don't know, maybe.
Okay.
But pointing to there being like a super reality, like that's the whole thing. Like not necessarily defining like this is what it is as much as it is, I'm recognizing that this is happening. So going back to this surrealism time period, like they didn't have language like synchronicity. They didn't have like all of these things. They were like the idea of unconscious, subconscious. They didn't have programs, or at least they weren't taught like, neuro-linguistic programming. And this is how the they didn't have any of that. I don't know what they had, but they don't have like they're not where we are. And the more I started reading, and let me finish this, and then I want to hear what you're going to say. It's just a sentence. The more I began reading about the surrealist movement, and the more I started comparing it to what at least I call synchromysticism, I'm like, this is the same friggin' thing. It's like what they called surrealism, I'm calling synchromysticism, but I've got like this 100 years of influence of a particular line of like Jungian psychology and like all of that stuff, but it's the same friggin' idea.
So, have you read The Fourth Reich by Jim Mars?
No.
I'm reading it now, and at least the first half is about the technology and the weaponry that the Third Reich had, which has me questioning this notion. You know, like sometimes I'll call back to like, well, what was lost in ancient Sumeria? You know, what was lost in the Nag Hammadi? You know, scrolls and in the caves. What was lost in all these things? And then I'm just starting to question, like, given everything that Hitler had and that they were running with, and that those people are now kind of infused in NASA and Bayer and all those, like, I just don't believe anything anymore as far as like what we have, what we don't have, what the surrealists were really working with. You know, I think we've been, so much has been kept from us. Not to hijack where you're going, but just saying, like, I don't know that I believe this notion of us not having certain things, the more that I read into like less indoctrinated history. Does that
So
make
are you,
sense?
yes. So I'm curious, like, is that when you say that, is that in response to when I was saying, like, could you imagine how they understood something without?
Yes, because I feel like part of like the disclosure coming out now, whether it's about aliens or Have viruses ever really been isolated? Has DNA ever really been isolated? Like, I feel like the big giant secret that they're holding on is what this reality construct is. And I think they know much more about it and have known way much more about it. And when I say way, I mean exponentially more than we've let on to. And especially with fame, you know, like at this point, I'm so suspicious of fame, not just now, but throughout. So were these surrealists truly in the dark as to the nature of reality, consciousness, synchronicity, multidimensionality? Like at this point in my mind, I don't know. I don't know about any of it.
I think that's a really good place to be. My take is when I was saying, like, I wonder what all of ours, mine, yours, anyone who's around right now, like our perception of reality has to do with the indoctrination machine which we went through, regardless of how aware we are that we've been indoctrinated. Like, you know, what are you going to compare it to? That version of Danny that's sitting next to you that didn't go through that? And so those people, if it even existed, because I certainly questioned anything even exists before my grandparents, because that's the oldest people I've ever met. But I'm like, it was a different understanding. That's all I'm saying. So, and if anything, I think that our understanding is more limited.
Agreed.
Okay. But what I do know is the description of what surrealism is the same thing which I do with synchromysticism. It's different because I grew up like in the environment I grew up in, and it probably was different from theirs. And I'm like, because I all of this, I always sit with the beginning point that this experience is a mystery. You know, it's an is. It is. We can understand maybe how it works, but it's in our blind spot. It's in the blind spot of being alive. It's just an is, and you got to work with that is, and that is a mystery. And I've been having this conversation, and then when I see what brought down the 9/11 Key Bridge, Chiron, ponds, like Baltimore Harbor, on the, like all of this sort of stuff, it came from the guy who's like, yeah, we've been talking about this shit for like 100 years, and we're probably the ones who like set this stuff up and are whispering in the ear, because maybe you're them and I'm you, and like, you know, the whole sort of thing, like taking that. So you, when we started talking, what, 35 minutes ago, I'm like, okay, this is where we're gonna go. This is kind of what I'm bringing to. So like, I have had this experience of like watching this Key Bridge thing happen, this buildup of the eclipse, this like surrealism. Like, it changed my idea. Everything's a fucking perception. Everything's a story. And then like how it works is the stories we hold, like we act out, like, and they come true. That is the nature of the is. And the second part is like we're blind to most of the stories we're telling ourselves, but that's another question. So anyway, coming into this eclipse with like that sort of momentum. And I've really have taken a lot of the tethering to regular life has been removed from me. Like, I don't really have a house. Like, I house sit, I move around. I don't have like a permanent address. I just got a passport though, so I'm very excited about that.
Congratulations.
My passport expired. My passport expired 5 friggin' years ago. And when it expired, like, I was just like, I'm like, I will never put myself in a position where I need someone's fucking approval to travel. Like, I was holding that energy. And then like it started getting a little bit far away from me, and I was like, God, I don't want to fill out the paperwork again. And then it was like, wow, I don't even have a home. Like, I kept to come up with excuse, 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 excuse. And then I heard someone was going to go somewhere, and I really wanted to go. And I'm like, God damn it, I'm just going to get a passport. I'm going to get it renewed. And I like suck it up. I tuck my tail between the legs. I go to to get it renewed, and I renewed it on the last possible day before I had to pay the next, like, the higher fee and fill out the big application. So I think that's also all part of it too. So anyway, my concern was like, as I was letting go some of the tethers, like, what issues am I going to run up to in paradigm, but not also like holding that sort of learning to release that story. So okay, so in the last house sitting gig, I had some visitors who came and stayed, who came to the eclipse event, and then they stayed with us at the place we were house sitting. And
Wait, eclipse event? Did you host an eclipse event?
yeah, it's Sunbury on the eclipse. That's
Oh,
where we kicked off the aerocirculation. That's where we kicked
how
off
many people
the
showed up?
maybe 25.
Nice.
Yeah.
Great turnout. Okay.
So we're there, and particularly in the middle of nowhere, right? So anyway, the people who came are like, really, like this concept of like reality, really, like, and how malleable it is, and with also a full understanding of like what at least what's being told to us through like the media and the news and all this sort of stuff. We all like really kind of like doubled down on this, like we're literally the ones who are writing this. How else would that Salvador Dali, how could that have happened? Like, how does that make sense? Like, that sort of like would be the question. Like, oh, well, it makes sense because we're the ones who wrote it. You don't remember it. I don't remember it. We don't know what this mystery is, but it seemingly is like the same person who wrote that. You're part of them. And I'm like, we are it. Like, we're being playful with that idea. And then we just start leaning into like writing our own story outside of all of the shit which is going on right now. And the entire world started bending to what we were talking about. And I think part of it happened because there were so many, there were four of us. Part of it happened because we were having so much fun with it. Like, we were laughing so hard. Like, there's no one's on ayahuasca, no one's on mushrooms, no one, like, everyone is like biologically sober. And we are like these stories, and I could go and give you some examples in a moment, but what I'm trying to share with you and demonstrate, and when I said, like, what is the energy I'm holding? Like I said, like, Danny, you just demonstrated, you went into this event where 90% of the people were holding a certain energy, and you're like, I'm gonna hold this friggin' energy because I'm Danny. And I'm like, that's what Dan, like, that's what this time is. And that's what like certain people are. Alec is holding an energy. Like, any, well, we're all holding energies, but particularly those of us who have some degree of influence on others because we're resonating with the energy. And like the energy which I'm holding is like really starting to get out there to like the movie Stranger Than Fiction, like this whole sort of idea of like, that's how strange and like malleable. And as we move, like to your point exactly, like how do we like not have to go and unfold the story that we are going the powers that be and sovereignty and we need to declare our freedom? Like, well, what if, how would it happen that we don't even have to go down that path, like your point entirely. And I'm like, I'm on the bleeding edge of like what that technology looks like. Like, and it has to be from someone who's like, all right, like, I'm letting go of the tethers and like, I'm leaning back, guys, I'm falling. Like, you're gonna catch me. And it's like, of course I'm gonna catch you because you're everything and everything is you. And like, it's all part of it. It's crazy Buddha shit, but it's real. And it's like, this is literally it. And you're, the same way that the surrealists describe themselves, and I'm going to mention another organization that describes themselves the same way. I don't know what this other organization is, and they're a little bit like kind of charged with their history, and I believe it's they it was done that way on purpose, so no one truly understands the nature, so you got to figure it out yourself. But this is what the Rosicrucians said: we're going to change the nature of reality. And no one knows what they were. No one knows, did they exist? Were they real? Were they good guys? Were they bad guys? There are, for every book that calls him a good guy, there's a book that calls him a bad guy. I read them all.
Have you tuned into the Hidden Life is Best podcast yet?
No, but I saw that you put out the you had the guy on, and I know he talks about Francis Bacon.
And he talks about Rosicrucianism, which is so in play right now, on a lot of different levels, which I'm not going to get into, but it's interesting that you say that.
Well, Francis Bacon is another great demonstration of like the malleability, like whether Francis Bacon is a real person or not, whether or not like what or whether it was multiple people, who knows? Like it, I used to say this when I was doing all the Francis Bacon research in my journey, was like, if this is a simulation, I don't know if it is, I don't know if it isn't, or if this is like, you know, something like Francis Bacon is just the name of an OS upgrade. Like, you know how Apple names all their OS upgrades? Like, it's the Francis Bacon upgrade. And it's like, that's why it's a new language. That's why it's a scientific method. That's what like all of those things are. And as it becomes more and more evident to me of this malleability, and like they're all like ghost stories that go like th these are all ghost stories, and they're like it's the biggest like Scooby-Doo sort of thing, like you're getting scared, but it's never anything like I don't know if this is like I'm gonna do a quick leapfrog for a moment, and then I'm gonna pause for a minute. I want to hear what you gotta say. So I guess like they're telling us World War III is breaking out, right? Like in Israel right now. So it was the last night. So my friend, he stayed with us for 10 days, and he left this morning, and maybe it was 2 nights ago. It was 2 nights ago. It was 2 nights ago. And we're like just like on fire in the best way of just like with so much like the it's so electric and so like alive, the life that was we've been experiencing over these 10 days. And what I mean,
that does it for the first half of my conversation with Michael Wan. If you are inspired, as you are inspired, to pick up the second half, you can find that posted on both my Locals and Patreon communities, where my supporters get access to all of my second half conversations, my post-show throwdowns, and oodles of bonus content. Those addresses are dannycats.locals.com and patreon.com/dannycats. As you're inspired to learn more about my work, about my books, my courses, my brand new pop propaganda digital media literacy course for teens and grown-ups alike, as you're interested in learning how to work with me one-on-one or to bring me into your organization, you can find out more about me at quantumlanguaging.com as well as dannycats.com. I'm also inviting you to sign up for my newsletter at either of those websites, because it is the best way to ensure that we get to stay in touch despite whatever big tech thought policing shenanigans may or may not unfold. That does it. Meet me over on Patreon and or Locals for the second half. And in the meantime, thank you for remembering that every word matters. Thank you for remembering that you our omniscopic amazingness. Have a rock. And for clicking that subscribe button, for liking, for sharing, for commenting, and for leaving some kind words as a review, as you are authentically inspired. As you are receiving any value from my podcast, as you dig it, as you listen regularly, consider supporting me on Patreon and or Locals, where for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half podcast interviews, as well as oodles of bonus content. Your support really goes a long way in supporting me as a journalist and an independent content creator navigate her way through a really crunchy time in terms of free speech. And as you are wanting to learn more about my work in the world, my books, my products, my quantum languaging coaching and consulting, you can find me at dannycats.com as well as quantumlanguaging.com. And if you're not down with a membership patronage platform and want to send me a one-time donation, you can use the Bitcoin link if it actually appears on your podcast listening platform. You could also send me a one-time donation by way of PayPal at dannycats@pm.me, Or by way of Venmo, where my username is Sadie Bloom. Again, your support means the world and makes a massive, massive difference when it comes to continuing to share this work with the world. Thank you for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that you are omniscopic amazingness and for having a rockin' day. See you next time, superstars.